Okay, read it back to me.
Okay, so I'll go, "You're Jeff, right?" And then he'll nod or whatever. And then I'll say, "Your friend Randy told me that you asked him to ask me to ask Jackie if she likes you."
Just don't say that I told you to ask him. I don't want him to think that I've been, like, pining over him or whatever.
What if he says yes?
Then just be like, "Okay, cool." Definitely don't act like you know I like him back.
Wait, do you, like him? Oh my God, Jackie, why didn't you tell me?
It's not your fault. What happened?
I know.
What? Actually, you don't know. It's totally your fault. But we were kids. And it was awful.
Why are you here?
Why are you here?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Wendy.
And I'm Penny.
And I'm Kat.
And this is Yellow Jackets WTF. This is our 12th episode of our Yellow Jackets podcast.
This episode, we're covering Yellow Jackets Season 1, Episode 6, Saints.
All right. Let's get started with our fucked up moment of the week. Kat, you are our guest host. You've been here before. You want to go first?
Yeah. And I'd just like to say I'm excited to be back. Thanks for asking me. And here's my fucked up moment of the week. I wanted to pick Mrs. Taylor's tuna quiche because I don't believe there can be a great tuna quiche that's fucked up.
It does sound really disgusting.
But what I did decide on was the rotten buck at the end. I mean, there's always a lot of fucked up moments in this show, and they're terrific. And the writers do such a great job of being accurate, and even their misdirection is clever. But it really bothered me that this scene with the buck full of maggots is so implausible. Yeah. You couldn't tie a rotten deer onto a stick and carry it back. The smell would be so atrocious, you would know it from the start. So I just, that bothered me. Because, I mean, even with the red velvet antler buck, it's so accurate, right down to the time of year that it is and when that would happen. But to believe somebody would take a rotten deer that smells, it had to smell worse than that bear in the woods that they passed on the way to the lake. Just, I don't know.
Yeah, like how would the deer, I mean, because the deer was alive when Travis saw it and Natalie like grabbed the gun and went out. Mm-hmm. So how was the deer walking around if it was full of maggots? Like, is there, and here's the one of those times when it's like, is there something supernatural going on?
Yeah.
Or is there some explanation for why a seemingly live deer would have maggots in its gut? I don't know.
There's no explanation for that.
Doesn't make any sense.
I know. It's a detail I have a hard time putting into the department of disbelief. Yeah. It's too out there for me. The scene did have one purpose. I mean, it did have a good purpose. There's a point where Lottie is looking at the deer. I mean, it has a red velvet. That's the bloody tissue that's on the antlers. But Lottie is sitting there and what she says is, "I'm not crazy." And Lottie puts her hand on her shoulder and says, "No, you're gifted." So that's the first time Lottie's admitted out loud that she's not crazy and alludes to the fact that she's saying things. And we see maybe the beginnings of her becoming a prophet in Lottie's eyes, and then that spreading to other people. I mean, we've seen the rest of it, so we see a little bit of how that happens. So I guess it had that purpose. The scene had a purpose, but just biologically, that bothered me. So that's my fucked up moment. How about you guys?
I'm going to go with a two-parter, which is Misty injecting Jessica in the car and the serial killer basement. Both scenes had this over-the-top Halloweenish, like organ music going on So it couldn't have been more clear that, you know, Misty is scary. It was like, bum, 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 during those scenes. And just the whole, the basement and how it's like sort of cheerful and also depressing. And, you know, that she's completely ready to handcuff someone to a bed and she's all happy about it. Misty's constantly my fucked up moment of the week.
Easily picked as the fucked up person of the show and moment of the week.
She's just happily grinding up narcotics while watching Kevin and Natalie have sex on her monitor. Just happy as can be in her Dexter coveralls.
She's in her element. Yeah. What can we say?
And if you think about it from Misty's perspective, she probably thinks like, boy, they are so lucky to have me. I am looking out after them.
Absolutely.
This Jessica Roberts is a problem and I'm going to solve it.
I'm going to take care of my people.
I'm going to go with, for my fucked up moment of the week, I'm going to go with Shauna having the chicken baby scene.
Oh, that was gross.
Somehow
hard to watch.
Second rewatch, I guess, because I knew what was coming. It made it all the more creepy and painful to watch.
Yeah, the chicken baby has an umbilical cord and its wings move. And that creeped me out.
Yeah,
it was super gross. And then Jackie says, he's beautiful, just like his father.
Yeah. There's some Freudian going on in there.
Yeah, it's awful.
There's a couple little details that I did notice in that scene too on rewatch that the girls are all wearing their uniforms.
Yeah, their Yellow Jackets uniforms.
Yeah, including Misty. And we've never seen her in one before. Huh. And that I thought, don't know exactly what that means, but it was interesting. And Jackie is very supportive of Shauna. Yeah. You know, would she, I didn't think about that. You said her remark was just like his father, looks just like his father. Mm-hmm. So does she know it's Jeff in the dream and is supportive? I don't know. It was just
I think
odd.
So. That's Shauna's, you know, biggest fear. And so that would be her biggest fantasy is that somehow Jackie would be okay with it.
Yeah.
And then I think hunger explains the rest of the dream, but gross.
Yeah.
She just talked about, you know, being pregnant in the wilderness and Misty fucking Quigley is the OBGYN on call. And there's Misty delivering the baby.
Good catch.
Thrilled to be there.
Yes. Okay. We can get started with our points. Kat, you want to go first?
Okay. I guess my first point, I hadn't noticed this before, but we have the title of the episode is Saints. And then we have the synopsis, which actually goes on about sex, the birds and the bees, and nothing about saints, actually. So I thought, what is that about? Here's what the synopsis says. It says, the girls tangle with the birds and the bees, navigating love, lust, and DIY surgery. In the present, blackmail, bunnies, and an icy reunion, Misty prepares for a house guest. I just thought it was interesting that none of that has to do with saints. I think we get that with Lottie's baptism. And they talk about prophets, but the one place I did see saints is in the scene where the three of them are in the motel room. Natalie's wearing an Yves Saint Laurent sweatshirt. And that just popped out. I'm like, okay, well, they're saints. It's kind of subtle.
But I was, this is actually one of my points also, Kat. And I was having similar thoughts. I was like, what does this have to do with saints? So I did the dorky thing that I do and looked up the definition and synonyms for saint. And it's
excellent.
Holy person, good person, canonized person, martyr, consecrated person, glorified person, typically posthumous. So I think it refers to Jackie. And how her mother is all like, Jackie was perfect and marvelous and gifted. Yeah, and also to Lottie and Laura Lee and how Lottie is, you know, possibly a prophet or schizophrenic or some other thing. And Laura Lee is every scene she's in. It just she's so sincere and she's so like sweet and good that if anyone deserves to be sainted, in this cast. I think it's her, but she sort of gives power to Lottie. Mm-hmm. So that's where I thought that was coming from, especially because, you know, Jackie's dead and they're remembering her in this like glorified way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, their answer, that answers my question. I just had like the funny little notes about, you know, sex, the birds and the bees and the lust. Some of the quotes, like in the scene where, we see Natalie and Travis twice in the blood-soaked crashed airplane. So we have a little sex and blood. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Natalie even points out how sexy that is. So we had that. And then we have the birds and the bees talk that Coach has with Travis.
Yeah.
Coach confronts Travis and Travis says, I had this covered, Coach. And Coach's response is, do you? I mean, literally? Because a pullout method, it sucks. Only 78% chance of success. I don't know. You tell me, if 22% of your players couldn't make it to the field, would you really want to play that game? And he pulls out the condoms. And Travis's response was, weren't we only going to be in Seattle for like a week? So it just, you know, he says, well, I don't think that's any of your business. Travis is like, I think you just made it my business. But I know there was a discussion before about his handful of condoms. So I just like that they can't, there was a little barb back and forth about that. And then, of course, we have a little discussion in the plane where about lust. It was really nice. It was Frank where Natalie has her little monologue about, you know, the 50s is calling. Our vaginas have monologues now. It's this newsflash, girls like to do stuff too. You don't have a monopoly on lust. Like, why is it your job to want to do it and my job to say no? Why do you get all the wants and needs? Who made this shit up? Who made this fucking rule up anyway? I just love when she says that, you know, the big laugh of our vaginas have monologues too.
Yeah. It's a great 90s feminism moment.
Yes, exactly. And then just one other, since I mentioned the buck, weird part about, okay, lust, birds and bees. At first I looked at that buck with the bloody antlers and I thought, like, is its head down in something bloody? How did that get on there? So I looked it up and antlers grow on the bucks up to like an inch a day. So they grow really fast. And when they do, it comes from a cuticle, but they're covered with this velvet tissue. So once they've gotten to the point where they've grown as much as they can, the buck will literally scratch with his hooves or up against trees, and it does shred like that and get bloody. So there's a good chance if you're out here in the woods, you might see that someday, and it can take up to 2 days. And what it is, it's preparation for breeding. Hmm. So birds and bees, yeah. But it's such a gross image. And then I thought, oh yeah, that really happens. So there's one of those accurate biology things that really, like, okay, they were accurate somewhere. What's with this deer full of maggots?
Yeah, it was an amazing image though. When Lottie sees that deer and she doesn't know if it's real or not, and the blood on the antlers, the first time I watched it, I was like, I feel like I know something about this. Like the bloody antlers is natural, but the scene was over so fast. And then of course Coach Ben explains it later, but it was, yeah, stunning image, really beautiful and creepy,
right? And we saw a van walk up and look where Lottie was looking and not see the deer, so we know it's one of her visions or hallucinations,
or the deer just like flitted away really quickly and quietly the way deer do
and then came back, because
yeah, she looks Lottie back and sees it there back,
she sees it again.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. I got to keep up Jason's, it might not be supernatural, line of thinking when he's not here.
I think that's what the show wants us to do. I think
absolutely.
And it does it so well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's playing with us all the time.
Yeah. Penny, how about your next point?
I wanted to talk about brunch. I'm a huge fan normally of brunch. I've never had tuna quiche, so I don't know if I would consider that a brunch food, but they were drinking what looked like mimosas. That's brunchy. I think a lot of the fan animosity toward Jackie is really about this scene. It's really her mother who is so just, well, I'm going to get into the details. So first of all, the scene opens with her giving Shauna the rabbit, the little ceramic rabbit, and Shauna being like, oh yeah, great, thanks. And Jeff is like, oh, look at that, it has babies, it's so cute. You can tell that they get a rabbit every year and they just whatever. And then Mrs. Taylor says, you two have an anniversary coming up, don't you? Jackie would have been so happy for you. I truly believe that. She was generous that way. And she always worried about you finding someone, Shauna. Shauna was like 17 when they got, or 18 maybe, when they got crashed in the wilderness. Like the idea that Jackie always was worried that Shauna wasn't going to find someone when they were 18 is preposterous.
Agreed.
And then the mother goes on to say, you two are a better match. You're both the type to be content. You don't want more than you have. And Shauna says quite loudly, and then Mrs. Taylor, oh, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, it's nonsense. All this talk about having it all. The fact is you just can't be remarkable and raise a family. And then Mr. Taylor chimes in with, and you're the mother of such a special little child. And when Shauna delivers my favorite line of the whole episode, maybe the whole show, I don't even like my daughter.
Yeah.
I love that.
And then, yeah, Jeff, like, that's a joke. She's kidding.
It's an inside joke.
And then, Shauna's face is like, she kind of puts her head down and shakes it like it's not a joke. It's not.
And then Mrs. Taylor says, Jeff works hard, but he's the only one who contributes financially, I mean. And then she offers to pay for college, and Shauna shoots it down very quickly. It's unclear whether or not Jeff would have considered it. I couldn't tell, but Shauna was like, fuck no.
I think Jeff was not too pleased when she said no. He kind of looked over like, maybe we should consider this. Like,
And I also think, like, Jeff, instead of blackmailing people, you could have gone behind Shauna's back to Jackie's parents. But anyway. And then I think it's just really clever. They cut right there from their scene to Jackie and Shauna in 1996 looking for rabbits in the traps that they had set up. And and Jackie is like, I can't believe I actually want to eat a rabbit. What are rabbits anyway? A squirrel with floppy ears and a pom-pom on its ass. And then they have a really uncomfortable conversation where Jackie talks about how much she misses Jeff. And Shauna challenges her, like, do you love him? Because Jackie's like, oh, I should have told him before we left. And they talk about how she wanted everything to be perfect and for her and Jeff to be each other's first. And Jackie seems kind of obsessed with this whole, like, picture perfect, like, high school sweetheart, each other's first love narrative.
I think that's a result of her mother. When we see her mother, it's everything's got to be storybook. And she was a princess. She was perfect. So she wouldn't see the world any other way.
Yeah. There's more great quotes from the mother at brunch. So, you know, Shauna goes upstairs. We can talk about the journal part later. But and then Jeff finds her. And then the mom says, when they go back to the table, she toasts Jackie. She says, to Jackie, whose light shone too bright to ever be extinguished from our memories. And then I love this part. We're reading Elena Ferrante in book club, and it reminds me so much of you girls. It can't always have been easy for you, Shauna. Jackie was just so gifted. I can't imagine how exhausting it must have been, always comparing yourself to someone so beautiful and smart. And so I looked up Elena Ferrante. I wasn't familiar with her before, but she wrote several books that are very popular. She's an Italian author. And probably one of her best known sets of books is The Neapolitan Quartet. And the first book is called My Brilliant Friend. It's a series on HBO now. I watched a little bit of it. It looks really, really good. It's about a long-term friendship between two girls that starts when they're about six. And one girl is like very, very gifted. And that's as far as I got with watching it. And then importantly at the brunch, you know, Jeff jumps in and defends Shauna's honor. There was just so much going on at brunch.
It was really cringeworthy, more so on the rewatch, I think just because of everything that we know now.
I mean,
and Mrs. I just Taylor. Thought like she gives Shauna a gift, but it's not a gift for Shauna. It's, you know, they're really, she hasn't ever tried to get to know who Shauna is, what Shauna likes, what she cares about. It's really just a selfish way of having someone to celebrate Jackie with, mm-hmm. but they don't really care about Jeff and Shauna.
No. Or a little bit of a guilt trip. She knows that Shauna's going to look at every one of those rabbits every day if she has them out at her house and think of Jackie. And I think the mother would really want that.
Yeah. I think it's odd how fixated the parents are on Callie and how special she is. Maybe in some weird way, she's like the grandchild they never had, but
right.
and they don't have Callie have. There at right. brunch.
Right.
Well, Kelly at this point, I think, would say, fuck no, I'm not going.
Right. But it's just, why are they so into her? I mm-hmm. thought that was just really interesting.
Or they're reliving what they could yeah. have had with Jackie. You know, they were sending Jackie to college and they never got that chance to do that.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, they have a lot of unfulfilled dreams of their own. I'm sad for her parents. I mean, no parent should lose a child.
No.
That's horrible.
Right.
But to spend 25 years torturing your child's best friend mm-hmm. With passive aggressive brunch is
yeah.
selfish.
I mean, be in their life.
Yeah. They're
not in her life. They're just this periphery of Jackie worship.
Yeah.
Come worship Jackie with me.
Yeah. It's a command performance.
Yeah. Yeah. And guilt is the ticket. You know, that's the only reason why Shauna's there.
Yeah.
And Jackie's right, there that's her probably obligation. Because Shauna's there.
Yeah.
So do you think there'll be brunch after this one happened? Especially when Jeff confesses. He's pointing out how brilliant Shauna is. Asks her, you know, have you ever had one of those IQ tests? One of those you're a genius. And then he rushes right into, Shauna and I were sleeping together when Jackie and I were still mm-hmm. together. And the faces, I don't know. They might not have brunch after this.
I think they'll be invited whether they go because they're the only ticket in town. So
yeah,
I thought it was spectacular. Now that we know Jeff is a good guy, he talks so sincerely that Shauna's the smartest person he knows. I believe that Jeff and Shauna came together after her rescue in a really natural way, and that their love was all their own. I don't think that Jackie's ghost haunts Jeff. That I think he truly does love Shauna and has no regrets. Unfortunately, I think Jackie's ghost haunts Shauna still.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I also think there's that scene where Shauna's standing in her kitchen and she's looking at the postcard that Natalie gave her, and you know, Jeff comes in and he's like, are you ready to go to brunch? And she's like, that's not till Wednesday. And he's like, do you think it's Monday? And I just wonder if, you know, there have been times in their relationship where Shauna's just been out of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like she's got a lot of trauma and he's probably seen way more of it than she even realizes he's seen and noticed.
And he's read about it in her diaries.
True.
So he knows.
Yeah. Has she lost time before? Has she not known what's going on? It just didn't seem like the first time that she didn't know what day it was. And he was really gentle and sweet about it.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, he's not the cad that I thought he was.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that Shauna has been able to give herself to anybody because of what happened to her, you know, fully.
And I think there's hope for her and Jeff mm-hmm. now that she knows that he's read the diaries and mm-hmm. loves her no matter what. And after everything that went down with Adam, I think there's like a whole renaissance for Shauna and Jeff possible now.
Couples therapy might be more successful this time around.
Yeah. All right. My next point was about Lottie. And I think we talked about this. They really are playing the line of, is what's happening to Lottie supernatural, or is this a combination of her mental illness coupled with hunger being, you know, surviving a plane crash and the other team members, hunger, despair, wishful thinking. Lottie finds Thaisa in the woods eating dirt. And in a previous scene in this episode, we saw that Ty had dirty hands and fingernails. So it seems like that must have been real. She must have really seen that. But Lottie isn't sure if it's real or if it's hallucination. This is kind of what the theme throughout the episode is, her questioning what she is experiencing and what she's seeing. I can't imagine how that must feel for her, never being able to trust what you see and what you remember. That has to feel awful. I mean, I've never really been in that situation. And the other teammates are kind of ridiculing her. There are several scenes where it's either alluded or more overtly said that Lottie's crazy.
Yeah.
Even Thaisa, who is, you know, sleepwalking and eating dirt, says to Lottie, you know, like, I don't have time for your crazy bullshit. So I just can't imagine how that has been making her feel. And I think she's taken great pains to cover up and hide her mental illness. And so having it discovered is probably very fearful and stressful for her. When Laura Lee is sympathetic to her and even gives her sort of a rationality of her visions, that those could be part of her faith, and almost like is impressed with what's happening to Lottie, I think this really emboldens Lottie. She really grabs a hold of all of that. And this is a turning point for Lottie, where she kind of accepts herself for whatever she sees and starts to feel confident about it. And I think this is going to lead into season two with the cult of Lottie. I think this is the origins of it. She gains strength by being baptized. Somehow this gives her visions credibility to her self-awareness. I also wondered, we see her have some visions while she is baptized, and very reminiscent of saints, I will say that. But that place that she was in, which looked like some kind of underground bunker or something like that, I wondered, could that be a real place that we see in season two? I'm curious about it, because it was a specific place. It wasn't dreamlike. You know, that part of it wasn't dreamlike. The candles and the lights and the deer and all of that was dreamlike, but the place itself was pretty specific.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw somebody theorizing that maybe there's a dam nearby and a dam would have tunnels within it that looked a lot like that.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. And I didn't think about that until I rewatched it today for like the sixth time.
For some reason, it reminded me of like the basement workings of an old school.
Yeah.
Because they're in high school.
Yeah,
that's like a boiler room. It made me think of a boiler
room. Like a 1900s exactly. school or something like that.
Like a creepy school basement that always smells weird and someone might live down there. Yeah.
Yeah, in another movie. We've seen that.
Yeah.
I went to a high school in the city that was built in the 1800s, and it was meant to house about 2,000 students. But when I got there, we had 400 students. It closed shortly after. It's part of Johns Hopkins University now. And like, we had so much fun running around that building unsupervised after hours, like getting into things we probably shouldn't have been in.
Right, and except for it being like flooded and so wet. That's what it reminded me of. You know, you're exploring some old building.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Kat, your next point?
All right. Well, and that is perfect for my next point. It's about the two scenes that were happening at the same time. It's juxtaposition between the baptism and the attempted abortion scenes. If on rewatch, the way they put those together is masterful. I've mentioned how much I like the editing in this show. But what we have is we have a scene with a baptism, which is a rebirth, and then the possible end of a birth with the attempted abortion. And the quick change, like I said, the quick changes back and forth are incredible. And you just mentioned part of the important part. You know, we have Lottie coming in and talking to Laura Lee, who she knows is a person of faith, and asking her, how do you know if what you're seeing is real? And she talks about the prophets and how belief is what made it real for them. And that was her answer. And then they go into the baptism idea and part, but it goes back and forth between Ty finding out what Shauna's going to attempt and shows up and supports her by saying, I'll help you. I'm not going to let you do this alone. And, you know, we have Lorelei supporting Lottie there. And then in the middle is that scene you just brought up where, I mean, literally under the water during the baptism, Lottie hallucinates or has this vision of being in that basement, the candles, seeing the buck again. But when I rewatched it, I thought, okay, she's walking in that basement. She's got the dress she's being baptized in. And she doesn't just walk up to the candles and light them like I've seen in movies they do before Catholic prayers. You know, they have all the candles, you light one. But she walks up the stairs. She ascends the stairs from this cold, wet place to those candles. And I thought, you know, maybe I'm thinking too much about it, but is this a sign of her ascension? You know, with the baptism and Lorelei supporting her? We see that later on, some of the other girls too do also. When Van takes a knee, and I don't remember
Misty.
Who it was. Was it Misty? Misty. Okay. So is this just a premonition of her ascension or something that the writers put in there? Just a little clue? And then, of course, that then goes back to when she's under the water and she's looking up at Lorelei and she's lit the candle. The candle flames up. We see Lorelei's face and then the light behind her gets brighter and brighter like a flame. So again, a premonition or just a hint towards what Lorelei's fate is going to be in the future. And also funny, they're standing in the same place that the baptism took place when they watch the airplane explode.
Yeah.
So I see all these little details and maybe they're just out there, but especially on rewatch, I'm like, okay, does this part knit together with that part? But yeah, the way that they could have done that separately, the baptism storyline and the abortion part of it, but they put it together very artfully. And I have to give the writers and the showrunners credit for addressing, I don't want to get political, but addressing a reality that many women go through in a show that's very female centered and not many shows do that. So
yeah,
you know, I think it took courage and I got to give them credit for putting something that a lot of shows would not depict so frankly and realistically. So yeah, that was my third point though, the way those two melded together and how they just really artfully did that.
I also found it really realistic that Shauna would, you know, very seriously consider and almost conduct a self-abortion because she's desperate and alone and scared. And I really identified with Thaisa in that moment because if I had a friend who was going through that, I would also try to be there for her, right? Like, I'm not going to let you go through this alone. It's horrible. But Thaisa is stronger than I could ever be. I don't know if I could ever actually try to do the abortion myself. Like, that's terrifying. But their growing friendship I find really beautiful because it's a deep place of mutual support.
I found it hard to watch this time around. I mean, probably all the times around. With everything that's going on today with... Mm-hmm. States threatening women's reproductive rights. I think, unfortunately, this is the reality that we're going to see coming up. And it's terrifying.
Right. And that's why I thought it was really brave of the writers and showrunners to address that. I mean, indirectly, but that desperation and that's reality, mm-hmm. even today, mm-hmm. with people who cannot seek medical care. Mm-hmm. So good for them for putting that out there because yeah, it's difficult to watch, but they did it in an okay way. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is reality. That part is reality.
Yep.
So good on them.
I also thought it was interesting that there were two couplings that probably weren't good friends before the plane crash, which was Lorelei and Lottie were kind of different, you know. Lottie was kind of sarcastic and biting, and Lorelei was sweet and innocent, and Shauna and Thaisa.
And that's a good catch.
Yeah, their friendship stays true. I mean, I don't think any of them have a lot to do with each other in modern day because they kind of want to forget about it and don't want to be seen together. But I think the episode where we have Ty and Shauna spending the night together is really sweet and reminded me of these scenes.
Yeah, and obviously Ty has kept in touch with Natalie. And she's paid for a rehab. And it appears to me she's kept in touch with Shauna to some extent, too. I don't think Shauna and Natalie have had interactions.
Yeah, there seemed to be bad blood between the two of them. And I think there's more to come that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
that was a very sarcastic reunion.
Yeah. And that's the first time we see the three of them together, grown up, Nat, Shauna, and Ty.
Yeah.
All right, Penny, your next point.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the postcards because, first of all, I couldn't find evidence anywhere that Thaisa got a postcard, only that Nat and Misty got postcards. And I also think that only Nat and Thaisa got the blackmail text and not Misty. She didn't seem to get the blackmail text. So I don't think the postcards and the blackmail are from the same place. I mean, we now know the blackmail is Jeff and hilariously Randy, who coincidentally was at the motel. I'm assuming he was there to watch Natalie for Jeff. But I think the postcard sender is still a mystery, and it's possibly related to the cult. Or like,
I don't think it's a mystery. Jason and I have had a disagreement on this one, and this episode really gave me clues and cemented one of my theories about the whole thing.
Who do you think it is?
Oh, it's the cult.
Yeah. I mean, okay.
It's a picture. It's a postcard with a mountain on it and the wilderness. And it says, "Wish you were here."
Yeah.
So I mean, to me, I'm like, there is a cult in the woods, and either some of the girls stayed there, there was to begin with. But the cult definitely send it. And I also believe the cult is a murderer. So, and
Travis.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Whether or not they're in the woods, wish you were here is a threat, right?
Right.
Like, I want you to be stuck back in the woods where you were before.
And it doesn't scream blackmail. Like that postcard right. by it just, itself doesn't say, give me $50,000.
But Thaisa comes right out and says, didn't you get the postcards? And she says something to the effect of the blackmailer sent them. I don't know what the quote is. I wrote it down there, but it was good misdirection by the writers because they refer to it as the blackmailer's postcard.
Yeah. But I don't think they have anything to do with each other at all.
Correct. I believe that too.
Do you remember if Thaisa got a postcard or...
Just she references that. Getting one.
Yeah.
She didn't have it with her, but she said she got one.
All right. And Shauna not getting one could be, I mean, there's lots of reasons why it could be, but it does always seem like Shauna is going to have a lot of status in this society that's being created in the woods because she's like the butcher person. Mm-hmm. And maybe she was like the leader of one faction and Lottie was the leader of another one. And so Lottie wouldn't want to send her the postcard because she's the enemy. I don't know. My head went in lots of circles about it.
That might have just been, I don't know. That's one I can't answer either. But possibly misdirection in the writing so that we believe that the blackmailer did send him. Because if it was Jeff wouldn't have sent his wife a postcard like that. If it was the postcard was sent by the blackmailer. That's the only answer I have to why she didn't get one.
Yeah, I just don't believe it.
All right. My next point is that the group is hungry. And this kind of is the catalyst that causes a lot of different things to happen. There's no berries and they haven't found any deer or any game around. They've been looking for things and it's obvious that it's all getting to them and they're hungry. And I think this just creates the fear to be ramped up of not only are we trapped in the wilderness without a rescue, but now we're facing possible starvation, which is scary for all of them. But also it causes Thaisa to really decide to go off on a trek to try to find rescue, which to me makes absolute sense. I would think that would be the right move to make. And it seems like I probably would have thought of it before now. I don't know. You never know what you would do. But and we know it turns out very badly for all of them. But the hunger, I think, is the catalyst. Like, as long as they were surviving with no issues, it wasn't so urgent to leave. But it's becoming more and more urgent.
Right. Well, the fear and hunger, and then possibly seeing Shauna go through the desperation of ending that pregnancy might have been the final straw to, it's time to do this. If people are getting that desperate, it's time to make a move.
Right. Shauna is a ticking time bomb. She's got an expiration date, and that's scary as hell.
When we kind of see her blow up, we see her lose it in episode 9.
And I think also hunger is probably adding to Lottie's erratic behavior as well.
Yeah.
I think several of her visions, you know, hunger seems to be a theme in there. And I think it's just all causing this sense of urgency and desperation that's kind of quickening up the pace of the drama and what's happening.
It's also causing tension. Hungry people, you know, we call them hangry for a reason. And Jackie just like attacks Natalie and calls her a burnout and accuses her of, you know, spending all her time having sex with Travis instead of hunting for food. It's an ugly fight, but it's totally the kind of fight that two people get into when they're hungry, where it's just like mean and pointless.
It was really venomous. Like, she basically called her a slut several different times in front of the guy that she knows she's in a relationship or interested in. I mean, you just don't do that.
And Jackie,
well, Mari jumps in there with a little dig too. So they're all kind of on that edge, and there are no Snickers in the woods.
Yep. All right. Kat, your next point.
My last point was just, we kind of covered it a little bit. It's part of the brunch scenes for sure, but Jeff really does love and support Shauna. And we haven't seen that before. There's allusions to him cheating on her, which I really believed at this point, up to episode 6. I think I still did, until we find out he's actually supporting her or the family by blackmailing someone to take them out of debt. But the scene where he defends her at the brunch, I love. It's great to rewatch that part alone. But then they also had a touching scene when they're driving back in the car, and he tells her he does not regret marrying her. They've built a good life. And I really see him as a good guy. And I thought he was kind of a loser before. So I guess my third point was probably more about Jeff, but I'm liking Jeff a whole lot more. And we see him really put everything on the line later too.
In my notes, I wrote, Jeff is a mensch. A Yiddish word.
Yes.
This rewatch has really been the Jeff Adoration Club.
Yeah. It has. He's no longer the guy that was shocked about birth club or birth club.
Book club.
Take that out. About book club. Wow. I really do have the birds and the bees on my mind.
And I think we all feel guilty for all the terrible things we said about Jeff in the first round.
Yeah.
So we're all making
I don't,
up
because
for it.
I never thought he was having an affair. I early on was like, totally I'm did. Not convinced.
Yeah.
I can see that more with the rewatches now.
It was
for
so
sure.
Obvious that we should have known, but we weren't hip to the total misdirection of the show. So,
right. We were definitely led in that direction.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of that, they do get home. You know, he's professed his love and glad that they're together. And he's had the whole episode at brunch where he defends her, which I think we all love. But then they're sitting in the living room and Shauna looks at her phone. She has several texts from Adam, including his clothes dropped on the floor. And just at that moment, Jeff walks out and he's having inventory control problems again. So he takes off. And you know, we see all this bonding, but what happens? He leaves and Shauna immediately texts Adam of where to go, what room, and I don't know, wait for her naked on the floor or something like that. Yeah,
I wrote it down. She said, she texted, lie on the floor face down and wait for me. Maybe I'll be there in 45 minutes. Maybe I won't.
And I'm not hallucinating,
which goes back to
right?
Shauna likes to be the boss thing, oh, right? Yeah. Remember when she had sex with Jeff and she was all like shoving him down? Like, and she's dumb.
She wants to be in control.
And Misty had that on her phone, right?
I don't know.
I had what on her phone?
I could just swear that Misty somehow saw their texts on her phone. I'll have to go back and look at it again.
Now I'm wondering too.
Because you know that's like what she does, because she
citizen detective. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
She had her friend that can hack emails, clone Shauna's phone. Who knows?
Yeah. In that scene where Shauna is looking at,
she does. I'm almost positive Misty has access to is watching their texts unfold.
That's gross. That's upsetting.
I'm going to have to go back at the end of this and make sure that I saw what I saw, but I'm pretty sure.
Endless reasons to go back and rewatch it. I feel so scattered. It's like, what episode did this happen in? Am I referencing something that wasn't in this episode? And I always learn something new that somebody else caught or saw. So it's good.
Hilariously, when Jeff is telling Shauna he has to go to the store, he goes, why don't you get a jump on book club?
Mm. Yes, a jump on book club. Put that down too.
I was like,
book club references now are terrific.
Yeah. Jeff, she's totally going to jump on book club.
Yep.
But then, you know, I didn't see the first couple of times I watched the episode. I guess I didn't pick up on that text that Shauna sent Adam. I no longer think it's completely insane that Adam just showed up at her house, because that text message she sent was pretty provocative. Mm-hmm. And then she didn't show up because she went to deal with the blackmail.
Right.
So Adam was probably lying face down on his floor naked for like an hour and a half.
Then he was like, I'm going over there.
Yeah. And now I'm like, oh, that's why he was parked out in front of her house. Mm-hmm. I get it. That text message would have made me come over too.
Maybe he was confused and thought he was supposed to be at her house laying naked on the floor.
Maybe.
That is funny.
Okay, Penny, your next point?
Let me see. I think we hit all my big points. I just have notes left.
Okay.
But I'll start with the fact that Shauna apparently is the source of calling Misty fucking Quigley. She says it when she's in the motel room with Nat and Thaisa. And then she says it in 1996 about Misty being her OBGYN.
Yes.
I wasn't sure where that came from, and it got adopted by the fan zeitgeist so quickly. Mm-hmm. Everybody calls her Mystery fucking Quigley now. I was glad to see that it started with Shauna. And I just loved her disdain for Misty in that motel room scene when, you know, Nat is like, should we bring Misty in? She's been helping me unravel some stuff. And Shauna's like, oh, naturally. Yes, you would want to bring Misty into this. You know, you've been playing buddy cop with her. She's just
that
like,
was funny.
He has no patience for Misty at all. It's a great.
I want to see how those relationships work out.
Yeah.
In the past.
Because what Misty alliances saves were her there? Ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. By helping her dispose of the body, which I'm sure will come with a price.
Another great bonding experience for the four.
Yep. I had a note. I thought we had talked about Sammy and a lot last week. And I noticed that grown-up Thaisa is talking on the phone about withdrawing money from the bank without Simone's permission. And she's doing it straight in front of Sammy. Like he's just sitting there eating cereal. And we talked last week about people that talk in front of children like they won't know what they're talking about because they're not, you know, smart enough or, you know, grown up enough. But usually they really figure things out that way. And it's probably obvious to Sammy that his moms are having problems and that Thaisa isn't right. And then Thaisa tells Simone that she didn't withdraw from the election because she looked over at Sammy and Simone and realized that she had gotten into politics for them and that giving up would be giving up on her family. I think this is the biggest lie ever. And she isn't fooling anybody, especially Simone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Simone's not buying that.
Simone's the most sane, regular, normal person in this show, including Sammy, the little boy who's so stressed out that he's disassociating.
Originally, I don't know. There is a possibility Simone is also crazy mm-hmm. and wrapped up in all of this stuff. We don't know.
Yeah, I had thought she was suspect for a while, but I don't think we've seen anything real in those 10 episodes that led us to believe that. But
we have to have someone normal in there for contrast.
Yeah. And
that's
I think
Jeff.
Yeah.
Except for he's a blackmailer.
That's true.
As most of, you know, I have at least one friend in the blackmail.
Yeah.
Interesting, Kat. We'll have to talk about that sometime. Ty is also very opposed to going to the child psychologist and very snarky about it afterward. And I wonder if that's just in general, she doesn't like the idea of psychiatrists because she knows she has tons of secrets that's and she wouldn't want them to be yeah. revealed, or if it's deeper than that and she really doesn't trust psychology. I don't know.
Or what was but her she experience was as a child?
Yeah.
We know she was
she had visions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's hard to know. And also, yeah. this was the episode where Lottie's dad and mom fought about taking her to a child psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Lottie's mom actually, in the fight, has a belief that Lottie might have a gift mm-hmm. or premonition. She really does. And the father just says, no, we're taking her somewhere. She's going to see a doctor.
Mm-hmm. So, a note that I had forgot to talk about when I talked about Lottie was that Lottie's screaming fit in the cold open before the car crash reminded me so much of her screaming fit during the seance.
Yeah.
Like it was in the same exact tones and it was really good.
I did not make that connection. Yeah. Interesting. I know that for whatever reason they chose to use the same setup for that scene and the scene with Sammy and yeah. Simone and Ty. Right down to almost having an accident. Now, it was a guy on a bike. And the screaming was, I think Simone and Ty both screamed. But it was interesting that they used the same scene setting of the car yeah. with Sammy in the middle. I don't know about you guys. I had one kid. I never put him in the middle of the car. They're on one side or the other. You don't sit in the middle.
It's the least safe spot. That's the death spot. Mm-hmm. You don't put a kid there if there's an option to put them to the side. But right. for TV,
but
they do it all the time.
Choice.
Yeah, TV.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just go with my last point that I had. Nat and Kevin are really sweet together. The moment that Nat has with Kevin's son is probably the biggest glimmer we have of have seen of Nat having a real life and real relationships outside of what this big thing that's happened to her in her life that seems to have defined her entire life. And I thought about that. Everybody else in the show kind of has something. Ty and Shauna have their families. Misty has her job and her citizen detective community. And Misty just keeps pressing on. You know, she's dating. She's out there trying to make a life, even if it's a Misty life. But Nat just seems to be out there twisting in the wind. The only tie she seemed to have was Travis. And now he's gone. And it's just nothing left.
Right. Yeah. We know that she had some interaction or something as a relationship with him. And when she's in his mm-hmm. house and she picks up that picture, they look happy together. I mean, that's a really nice picture. So we know that they had something, right down to a pact to not die by suicide with each other. So yeah, she went down to a bad place and doesn't connect with anybody anymore. So it was nice to see, even though the connection with Kevin was fake, which was pretty sad. But yeah, she had a human moment with his son.
I think her connection with Kevin isn't entirely fake. I think she has feelings for him, but they're just not nearly as strong as her need to uncover what happened to Travis.
Mm-hmm. And right, also, but I it had a purpose. It starts out with wanting to get information about the autopsy And, you know, she ends up taking is gone. So yeah. She had a purpose to that, even if there were some feelings underneath it. She didn't let that come out or stop her.
Yeah, I agree.
No.
Any other?
Yeah, the moment with his son at the soccer game, she looks sincerely and genuinely happy in that moment. It's like a little glimpse into the Nat that could have been.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Other notes? Nobody's brought it up, and I didn't notice it the first or second time around. But this is the first episode we've had where there's no music from the 90s. We have the odd weird sounds and some instrumental, not very much, but there are no songs in this one, which I thought that is interesting because it's one of the things we all love about it. And they chose not to, which I haven't thought about why they chose not to.
I think maybe it's like you said in the beginning, there were a lot of small scenes. It wasn't any like big, I don't know, music moment. You know what I mean?
That's true. There weren't long scenes with a theme that they could mm-hmm. come up with some music. So, I mean, they chose not to do that also. Mm-hmm. They could have put something like that in there. Something on the way to brunch. What in the world song would you pick out for the brunch?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
God. Something uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's something to think about. But it's a big difference from all the listeners, other episodes.
Listeners, write in. Tell us what song you think would go best with that horrible brunch with Jackie's parents.
Yes. Definitely.
Love it.
Definitely. Let us know. Some feedback. Let's do it.
How about any other notes, Penny?
No, we got all my notes.
I had another strange one because strange. I don't know. Along with the music, I was looking at editing and their choices. And I bring up editing all the time. The way they put this together with a storyline, there were 35 breaks from scene to scene, different scenes. And out of that, gosh, there were, in 58 minutes, there were 35 scenes that jumped back and forth. Okay. Yeah, I just counted 19 of them between 2021 and 1996, including the one in 1989, the first scene in the car. But that's a lot. And like you said, that was less than what, I mean, some of those scenes were less than 30 seconds, but they were still powerful and part of the story. I just thought that was amazing because not many shows can do that well. We know a lot of shows that do it horribly in definitely less than 58 minutes and 35 scene changes. So.
They really keep the intensity up. There's no filler in this show.
Oh, yeah.
Which is delightful. Like it's
really, that's why we love it so much.
Yeah, every minute is mesmerizing.
Yeah, it's why dense. We want to sit down and talk about it. It's why we're podcasting about it. It's why we have our own little Yellow Jacket cult thread online. And there was just one thing that I thought was funny. There was Danny Mears on Twitter. And Danny Mears is the one that dumped Lottie. For a second cousin. And he actually did respond to people on Twitter and referenced his second cousin and possibly Mari. I think I was going to look it up. I don't want to do that yet, but I just thought it was funny that there was a Danny Mears on Twitter who people contacted because, you know, he dumped Mari
people
for a second
really
cousin and had something interesting.
Creating good Twitter accounts. Like, it's really funny. I've always enjoyed that, you know.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
I thought Natalie's monologue to Travis was really funny, kind of added a little bit of levity in the show, which doesn't have much. The 50s called, they want your dumbass attitude back. It's 1996. Our vaginas have like monologues now. And I couldn't help but think that the writers have seen Mike and Dave Needs Wedding Dates, which is just a silly, funny movie with Anna Kendrick and
Aubrey Plaza.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. She's so good. And Audrey is the one who actually quotes and says, hashtag 2016, women can do shit now. And I just thought they must have seen that because it was so close and funny. I thought that was really good.
That is a good movie. I should see it again. It was funny.
It's funny. It's like good for when you need something light.
Yeah.
Like
after this show.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Oh, we go brunching, brunching. The magic begins. We go brunching, brunching.
are back, and we have Penny with bringing us some Yellow Jackets news.
All right. There wasn't a lot of news this week, but Ella Purnell, who plays Jackie, has been cast in the Amazon Prime series Fallout opposite Walton Goggins. They haven't revealed yet what exactly her role is going to be, but I know a lot of people who play the Fallout game are pretty excited about the series. I'm a huge Walton Goggins fan, so I'll definitely be checking that out when it comes out.
Sounds good.
And then I found this article about Jackie's diary and why it has events from the late 90s. And it's a really long article, so I'm not going to read it all. But when Shauna is in Jackie's bedroom, she picks up that journal and she flips through. And there's a list in there of like movies that she wants to see, or that that she, and parts that she would be in those movies. And it lists movies from post 1996, Titanic, 1997, 10 Things I Hate About You, 1999, American Beauty, 1999, and Bring It On, 2000. And the showrunners have confirmed that that is not a mistake, that that's intentional. And the article says, the citizen detectives at home were quick to catch the movie errors in Jackie's diary, assuming Yellow Jackets production had either just made a mistake or were hinting at Jackie's survival. Yellow Jackets showrunner Jonathan Liskow confirmed via Variety that the movies in Jackie's journal are no mistake and that the person responsible for the page will eventually be revealed. Liskow explained that the movies released after Jackie's Yellow Jackets season one death were strategically calculated details and will connect to Shauna seeking some kind of reconciliation with the past. In a separate interview, Yellow Jackets creator Ashley Lyle remarked, being astounded by how many people questioned Jackie's death, then elaborated that Jackie's journal will tie together neatly with Shauna's survival guilt later in the series. The creators have explained that Jackie's journal is an Easter egg for the writers that will be followed up in Yellow Jackets' future as a character exploration, not necessarily a plot device.
Huh. I love it.
So,
what does that mean?
The article goes on with the author's personal theory that Jackie, you know, starting in like 1998 when they got rescued, was going over to Shauna in 1998 was going to Jackie's house to, you know, have brunch on the birthday with the parents, and would hang out in Jackie's old bedroom and pretend Jackie was still there, and that the two of them were doing what they used to do, which was like come up with silly lists and write them down in her journal. They also point out that the handwriting is different between the pages that were definitely what Jackie had written and then the page with the movie listing. It's not exactly the same handwriting. So it might be that Shauna or someone else wrote it and the older stuff was Jackie's.
I love it. I'm glad you found that, because I was thinking too, kind of along those lines, that in Nostalgia, she showed up and wrote those in. We saw her imagine speaking to Jackie twice in the room. So yeah. I'm glad that they're going to tie that in. I hope it's surprising. What's more surprising than Shauna just doing it?
The way that article reads, it almost makes it sound like someone else also wrote in the journal.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's like that. Maybe somebody was messing with Shauna and put something in there, and Shauna was like, what's happening? Is there a ghost? I mean, with this show, I don't put anything past them.
Maybe Misty we'll fucking Quigley crawled in the window to freak her out and just wrote it in there.
And I don't know why, but I think of Javi, because Javi was journaling. So I don't know why. That's what it makes me think of.
One more thing that I can't wait to find out.
I know. Season two can't come fast enough.
All right. So next we have our listener feedback, and we got three voicemails this week. This one is from Steve Brown.
Hello, House Podcastica, Wendy, Penny, and Kat. This is Steve, and this is for Saints. Yeah, I think that's the one we're on.
Oh, dang, the lungs on this kid, young Lottie. You gross, I'd eat the crap out of a mouse. Good comeback, they're second cousins. She didn't want to tell him that she was visiting Natalie because she didn't want to know that Natalie's in town or that they're seeing each other. I don't know. I just mentioned others from the team, meaning there's other survivors. Summary of the first five episodes, Shauna. Good job. Is this actually a good idea? Because they don't know where they are in the wilderness or how deep they are. But this Van and Thaisa
couple is so cute.
Did speak of Jackie in the past tense. I remember at this point, we didn't know if Jackie died in the wilderness or afterwards. And I know people were like obsessing about how many candles were on the cake, but now we know the truth. Or at least think we do.
I still laugh at that line. I don't even like my daughter. I don't. Misty effing Quigley. I have a secret boyfriend too.
Still don't know if this is just in her head or a hallucination or a ghost of Jackie, right? But it is younger Jackie.
Jackie's mom has a book club. I didn't remember that. Looking back, it's amazing that Jeff is so... What he's doing here defending Shauna is great.
That's right, the crazy that is Thaisa, eating dirt.
Now that we know what's really going on with Jeff, this is really a sweet moment here in the car. Not watch this scene with Shauna, no.
Some time has passed because Lottie's wound looks like it's pretty much healed and scarred over.
I know that Jessica is working for Thaisa at this point. I don't remember. But I know what happens with her and Misty. Jump on your book club.
Now we see Thaisa sitting in the tree.
And she bit her own hand. I can't wait to hear you guys talk about this one. So glad you're going to finish this up.
That's awesome.
That's great, Steve. I forgot about that last scene. Yeah. When she, you know, the thing is she didn't have blood on her shirt or on her mouth. So somebody else bit her, possibly.
It's possible. That was my runner-up for fucked up moment of the week. But Misty, man.
Yeah, that was pretty Misty in her basement too. We saw Thaisa eating dirt twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gross.
All right. Our next call is from Anwen. I just want to say, Steve, I'm just so impressed with the fact that you always keep it all straight, more so than I do. And I'm on the podcast. So thank you, Steve.
Well, that's all that live Steving while he's watching.
Yep. Yeah. Here is Anwen.
Hey guys, still thoroughly enjoying this rewatch and really loving all the little snippets that pass you by the first time and then mean so much more the second time. I really liked how Van, when she was in that lake or pool or whatever with Ty at night, and she says to Ty, "You always win," and Ty says, "That's why I like to play," and that means a lot more later when you know all about the election and everything. I really liked seeing the sort of dream sequence or vision sequence with Lottie and her baptism. And I guess last time the symbolism was kind of there in terms of her lighting the candle and making her candle burn brighter. So she lights the candle, sort of symbolizing taking on that faith from Laurelee, and then her own flame kind of ends up burning brighter. But of course, last time we saw it, we didn't get the symbolism of her seeing the vision of this massive fireball behind Laurelee's head, and now I saw it and I went, oh my god, she's having a vision of Laurelee's death. I really loved seeing Jeff all spruced up and nice for his brunch, and he's so respectful at first, and then of course just stands up for Shauna, and I just think, oh my god, team Jeff, he's so amazing. And Shauna doesn't know yet that he's true to her and what he's doing everything for. So it makes it even more sad when you do watch it. And finally, that chicken baby. Oh my god, it grossed me out even more this time than last time. I don't know what that must have been like for them filming that scene, giving birth to this animatronic moving chicken and then having to grab a drumstick off it and eat it. That was absolutely crazy. Anyway, talk to you next time. Bye.
Thank you so much, Anwen.
Thanks, Anwen. God, I love her accent.
Yeah. Can't wait to hear it in person.
Everybody, keep calling in. It's so great to hear your voices, even better than reading comments. Yeah.
Definitely.
All right. That's our show. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all of our contact information at podcastica.com. Jason has revamped the entire website, and so it's super easy. Everything is all in one place, and it's really easy to also leave a voicemail, which has really good audio quality. So please, I think that's probably why we're getting lots of voicemails too. Please continue to do that. It's great.
And while you're there at podcastica.com, check out some of our other shows. I know Moon Knight just started, and I haven't watched it yet. I'm excited. I was waiting until after we recorded this to start Moon Knight.
It's on.
I did. Yeah. No, I couldn't sleep. Watched it last night. It is Terrific.
Really? Okay, oh, yeah. Great. That's
it's
yeah.
a trip. That's it's awesome. A trip for
it's
sure.
Yeah, it's definitely on my list of things. I'm so far behind on everything. I guess I can let the cat out of the bag. You guys will be the first to find out this information, is that we are going to podcast on Ozark, the last part of the last series. So I was talking to Rima and Jason about this today. It's, the feed is going to be on Strange Indeed. And we're thinking about doing like a recap and hopes and wishes for the back half of the season finale. And then do it week to week until the show is over.
Excellent.
Are you guys watching that?
I haven't been, but I will.
It's great.
When,
it's
really when does great. The second half start up again?
April 29th.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have to get a house sitting job so I can binge it again.
Yeah.
Our next episode is going to be Yellow Jacket Season 1, Episode 7, titled No Compass.
Can't wait to hear who's going to cover that one. So that's our show.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Buzz, 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 buzz.